Hi there, once again, welcome one and all to Plenty of Noise. This is a podcast / radio show that I am doing in association with a radio station called Radio Firework. My name is Nick, I am your host. I sing and play guitar in a band called Cadet Carter, and this is my little show about everything rock. I'm glad you guys tuned in. I'm glad most of you, or some of you, have already listened to the other episodes of this show. I've been getting great feedback, and it really motivates me to keep doing this. We've got a great show tonight with a great guest. A friend of mine, singer-songwriter Kaylee Goldsworthy, joins this show. She is a singer-songwriter in her own right. She also plays with Dave Hawes and the Mermaid. She plays with Frank Iero, who is also in My Chemical Romance, by the way. And she's an all-around badass. And we talked about songwriting, different approaches to songwriting. And we also talked about cooking and podcasts, actually. It's been a great conversation. But before we get into this, I have another announcement to make, because today, when this show airs, it's Friday the 13th of November. It's Friday the 13th. And my band, Cadet Carter, has just released a brand new single. It's called The Best Part. It is a song about positivity in challenging times. And I wanted to give this song kind of a radio premiere tonight. I really hope you guys like this song. This is The Best Part by my band Cadet Carter on Plenty of Noise.
Waiting to discover until the day you
Cadet Carter, The Best Part, on Plenty of Noise. This is the new single by my band. Thank you for listening. If you like this song, stream the shit out of it on Spotify, on Apple Music. There is also a video up on YouTube. Just tell your friends, let everyone know if you like this song. Enjoy. But now, without further ado, here is my conversation with the great singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and all-around badass, Kaylee Goldsworthy. Hi, Kaylee.
How are you? I'm sorry.
I'm good. I'm how are you?
I'm sneaking breakfast.
that's totally fine. You look good. How have you been?
Thanks. Hold on, I'm going to swallow.
It's all right. It's only a podcast. It's not a YouTube thing.
Okay, cool. I didn't know if it was going to be video or just audio.
No, just okay, audio. Cool. It's a thing that I've started out of pure boredom, really.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I have a lot of time on my hands. You have. Isn't one of those about cooking, actually?
Yes. It's called Friends with Benedict. And me and Dave Hidalgo Jr., the drummer of Social Distortion, him and I have been friends for many, many years. And we have toured a couple times together because he played drums for Dave Haas on the tour.
Yeah.
So we became really good friends and we just love food. So we just started that, again, out of boredom.
So you put two and two together. We're good friends.
Well, we had the Instagram account going for years, but we never really did anything with it. And then finally, once this hit, I was just like, it's time to, let's do some more with that.
Yeah, cool. Does that?
I don't know about you, but I miss traveling with food. Like, I miss that experience.
Tell me about it. It's I miss the whole experience, really. I never thought I would. To be honest, because touring, to me, touring was always kind of a thing that I had to do. And I'm a studio guy. I love being in a studio and recording music and all that kind of stuff. And then someone says, we better go out there and play live. So, and then I do it and I enjoy it. But if I had to choose, it would always be the studio for me. But how about you? Huh. I mean, what are you doing all day long apart from the podcast thing? Are you like, do you play music at all?
I do. I did a couple of, it's interesting. I don't have like a private studio space in Philly, but I do have a membership to this awesome location organization called Rec Room in Philly. And it's basically like a co-working space that also has co-working studio spaces. So it's fantastic. It's super cool. They even have a podcast studio. So I was kind of using that, my membership to that, as a means to enable me to have a studio space. And then once everything shut down, like it's reopened now, but I don't know, there's still something kind of iffy to me about co-working spaces.
Yeah.
And co-working studio spaces even more than that. Like, there's not a lot of ventilation in soundproof rooms. And you have to like really be careful about that. But we also don't know an awful lot about anything. So it's still a giant mystery. So basically I've been recording from my house, which has been an interesting challenge. I did some work for the Menzingers acoustic record that just came out. I did a couple of other projects as well for releases that haven't been announced yet. I'm just writing. I'm working like other jobs that I've had in the past just to kind of keep
going.
Some income coming in.
Yeah.
And then I'm working on another show as well. Friends with Benedict's is finished with the first season, but we're just kind of trying to like, we called at the end of the first season just so that we had some time to regroup and
That's very Netflix of you.
anything to have a mini break. And I'm working on my own show as well to kind of incorporate some more music into that.
Cool. Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about you know, your situation in the States being a kind of I guess it's the thing you do the most, like being a touring musician, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, because I talked to a common friend of ours who we toured with a couple of years, I mean 1 year ago, I won't mention his name, but he basically said, because I wanted, you know, I said, hey, I'm doing this podcast. Do you want to come on the show and talk about songwriting and, you know, being a musician in 2020 and being into rock music in 2020? And he said, I'm basically taking some time off of music. So he really said, I haven't got a guitar around me. I'm not writing any songs. I'm out in the woods being all by myself and with my girlfriend, and that's it. So I wanted
love
to talk
that.
Yeah, but it sounded kind of desperate, actually. So I felt very sorry, because it didn't, you know, if someone goes, I'm kind of done with the musician thing and the you know, going after music as a way to earn your living, I'm fine with that. But it sounded like the world is so fucked up right now. I don't know what to do. I'm just I'll just call it quits, you know. And that was really sad. And that was one of the first questions that I wrote down for you, is like, are you like, do you still, is playing music still your main thing that you do on a, like an average day, or is it something, has it probably returned to being something that you do to chill, you know, at night?
Just, you know, that's a really good question. And it's also something that I've kind of been grappling with since March.
Mm-hmm.
You met me from playing in The Mermaid.
Yeah.
And you also, I'm guessing, like, you know that I do my music, I play in other bands as well. I
yes.
do auxiliary for tours. I'm constantly on the road. I'm constantly learning other people's music. I'm constantly keeping myself kind of motivated and creatively stimulated.
Yes.
And then I decided at the end of 2019, after I did the biggest solo tour that I'd done to date, that I wanted to like take that dive and just, you know, I would do other tours. I would play with other bands if the opportunity was there and it felt right. But I wanted to put myself at the forefront of my focus.
Mm-hmm.
So on January 2nd, I got into the studio and recorded a new record. And
cool.
Yeah, except 2020 had massively different plans than I did.
Yeah.
And I think that since March, the biggest struggle that I've had to deal with is, and I think I'm not alone in this at all, I think it's something I realized I needed to really take care of, was my mental health.
Yes.
And what the rug being pulled out from underneath you feels like. And also the struggle of not wanting to feel bad about mourning the loss of your industry when
yes.
there are seemingly such larger problems in the world. You know, I felt that I couldn't feel sad because there are people dying. I felt
yes.
that I couldn't be upset because the world is a mess right now. I felt that I couldn't possibly feel upset because, you know, my backyard isn't on fire.
Yes.
Literally.
Yeah.
And I think it took a long time for me to realize, I always knew that my relationship with music was one that is very much like a relationship. And there are some times when you kind of have a lover's quarrel with your creative passion. And I was mad at music for a minute because I had worked my ass off last
yeah.
year and I recorded a new record. And
now music has let you down?
you know, I thought that music had let me down. It felt that way. And then I just kind of realized that, that it didn't let me down. It's just kind of the circumstance that we're all finding ourselves in.
Yeah.
And so no, music for a long time, probably the first 4 or 5 months, was not the main priority. It was not something I was doing every day. I wasn't playing guitar. I wasn't writing. I was angry. Yeah. But I didn't know why I was angry at it. I think I was mad because I wanted to be doing something I couldn't do. And then I was also angry because I was mad at myself for being sad when there are
other people with worse problems.
Exactly.
So it seems, you know.
Totally. And then I just kind of realized through talking to a lot of people and therapists, like, you know, that this totally okay to feel. And it hasn't been until recently that, you know, I finally started writing music again that I actually really enjoy. And I've been doing it for fun and working on this other show. You know, I'm so grateful for my agent, who doesn't need to be a cheerleader right now. Like, there aren't shows happening. But it's been a really wonderful opportunity, and also like the kind of like the claw in the toy machine. Like, I needed to kind of be picked up forcibly.
Yeah.
And just kind of like put back on the path of being like, you know, you might feel like you can't do it right now, or you might feel like you don't know your place as a musician right now, because again, I write songs about interpersonal relationships, and I've, you know, I try to also write songs about like world events and feelings and that sort of thing, but I've always just been more of an inward storyteller.
Yeah.
And I kind of struggled with like, what do I have to say right now that's
relevant in any way?
Yeah. And so it took a second to like reignite that passion again, to remind yourself that like, it's not, there's no creative pursuit that's not worth going after, because it helps you, it helps other people. But I also, you know, needed to first get over my own insecurities and, you know, shame of feeling so.
Yeah, feeling bad.
Feeling.
Yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
So many feelings. And I'm on the rebound now.
What are your songs? What are your new songs about then? Because I started, you know, when this show airs, this is the show where we are going to be presenting our new single. I'm just, you know, I'm a cross media guy, you know.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, same here. So we decided to release the new single on Friday, the 13th of November of all days, and write a song about positivity. So that was the main thing that we wanted to do. And when I started, you know, I started out around here. This is my little home studio space. And I started writing, and everything that I came up with was like sad, slow numbers. The lyrics were like very dark. And I was like, I shouldn't be doing this. So I just kind of forced myself to write sort of an uplifting, positive song with lyrics that go, you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. You don't know how long that tunnel will be, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I'm always a very pessimistic guy, and now I find myself in the role of like releasing an optimistic song for everybody to go like, cheer up, everybody, you know?
That's great.
And that actually, speaking of therapy, that has helped me. So, you know, I felt better after that song was like recorded as a demo, and I sent it out to the guys in the band, and I was like, I've done something positive in such negative times, you know. It's so untypically me. But so I was wondering, what are your songs about? Would you say they are like with a positive outlook, or
it's funny, I have always been the optimist.
Really?
I love to see the best in people. I always keep my head up. I don't believe in failure. Yeah. I don't believe in bad days. I think that you kind of have shitty moments, but that's, you know, it doesn't define the day, you do. And I have always tried to be that way. But when it comes to my songwriting, I have a fascination with feelings.
Yeah.
And so the songs that I have been writing have been about kind of a close examination of those monsters that we have. Like, I've been writing a lot about fear, mm-hmm. because it's not something that really serves us. It's the same thing as worry, which is something I tell, you know, my friends or loved ones all the time when they're experiencing it, that it's, worry is a wasted emotion because we don't know what's going to happen. It just causes us to spend time and emotional and physical energy on something that we cannot predict the outcome of. And fear is something that I think we're all struggling with on a mental, like a timeline, as well as a physical one.
Yeah.
And so because I have a tendency to internalize a lot of these feelings, I've been trying to take a more positive approach at what the overall vibe is, or like plot is of these songs. But I think it's super important to, for me at least, to dive deeper into like where this fear is coming from. What is this fear doing? It's not worth it. But also, like, you know, I can apply it to my own personal experiences, then I can apply it to so many things that are happening outside our houses right now.
And many people, I think most people can relate, don't they? I mean, it's something that doesn't get talked about all that often, like these demons, I'm going to call them.
Yeah.
There is a Welsh saying that says, worrying doesn't kill you, but it still takes your life. And I think that's a great saying.
I love that. I'm gonna adopt that one, because
put it in a song. I've tried, I failed. Maybe you can do it.
But, I'll try.
But yeah, so it's an interesting thing with songwriters, because when you meet people on tour or something, they're always, you know, we are musicians, so we like to go on stage and have, you know, smile at people and make sure that everybody has a great time while we're playing. And it's also positive. And then you just head back into the studio and you write, and it's the darkest shit, you know, and you go, where does that come from? You know, it's always, I don't know about you, but I've experienced that like a lot of times, but I go, where does that come from? Or I hand out the lyrics to a new song to the guys in the band and they go, are you okay? Like,
oof, yeah.
What's that thing about pills? Have you been taking any like medicine or something? I was like, no, it's just a great, you know, it's a great thing to express. It's a great comparison. You don't get it, you know, and they go, it's very, do you really like, do you want to sing that in front of people? Do you have any lyrics that you have like problems singing in front of people? Or that you have, you're like, you've recorded them and then you think, I don't know if I want anyone to hear this.
Oh, all of the songs.
Really?
I mean, I have a habit of writing songs that sound happy until you hear the lyrics. And then like, you know, I thought my first record I released out in 2013. And like, I don't really even consider that my first solo record. It was more of an exercise. And like, I had my band had just broken up. I was just kind of exploring songwriting without other people.
Yes.
So my last EP that came out in 2017 was the one I kind of was like, this is me. This is my first go at this. And I was taking a much more honest and intimate approach at songwriting. And, you know, anybody who knows me well knows what the songs are about.
Yeah.
And knows who the songs are about. And there's a lot of vulnerability that I think you have to overcome if you're really, one, want to talk about your feelings when they relate to a specific person, a specific thing. And I also, you know, I didn't want to name names, and I didn't want to like make it so intimate that like people couldn't apply their own experience to the song, because I think that that is like one of the greatest gifts as a songwriter that we have, is the ability to write music that, you know, I've had people tell me that they think this song is about this, or how they interpreted the song, it helped them get through a breakup or meeting someone new. And I love that.
Yeah.
It's not at all what the song was about for me, but I want my songs to be able to be applicable and helpful to people. So I don't really, my old band, Scarlet Ending, we delved really deep into the macabre in regards to metaphors and visualizations and lyrics. And I haven't gone too dark, but it's more so just like a personal unveiling.
Yeah.
Just like a deeper look at like, you know, sure, I'm okay, but like, I'm still going to talk about this breakup that fucking wrecked me four years ago.
Yeah. So you've recorded a new, is it a full length album that you've done just before the pandemic hit?
Yeah. I'm just going to start doing EPs because we're starting the music industry before the pandemic. Who knows what it's going to be like once we're out of this?
If there even is a music industry.
Exactly. There will be.
Yeah.
We need it. We need it. Everybody needs it. I, as an unsigned artist, I am digging this whole singles world that's happening again.
Yeah.
So the ability for me to go in and record four or five songs, I can do that in a week or 2 weeks and be done.
Yeah.
So I kind of like the idea of having a more, at the time, I liked the idea of having a more immediate turnaround.
Yeah.
I don't know when these songs are going to be released. I can't wait for them to be released, but I've also, you know, kind of figured that I would just move in that sort of incremental pace where it's EP. And then, I mean, I thought I would have 6 months to work on some more songs while I was touring, but now I'm not touring. I'm still working on new songs.
Going on.
Yeah. So I'm kind of going to start backlogging EPs from here, I think.
Cool. Because on the last episode of the show, I talked to my friend Matt, who's in The Dangerous Summer. And they have kind of gone the other way. So they started out recording an EP, and now because of the pandemic, it turned into a full length album, and they've gone all independent. Like I think they haven't got a record deal now. So they're doing everything themselves, and they are still, you know, they want to release the new album at the end of this year. And I think, I mean, we've been talking about this with my band. Is it a good time to release music right now? Because people are, you know, they're at home more often. They maybe have more time to listen to music. Or is it the worst time ever to release music? Because our record label was so we were hearing about like big bands from the States that our record had to wait for, you know, because they were like the fast lane and they would make more money, obviously. So, and then all of that stuff got postponed and moved to 2021 or even further. Some bands, I think, even canceled the whole release. They were like, we'll get back to you when we have a date, you know? And we were thinking that might be a great time for like small bands like us to like step up and fill the airwaves of the radio stations, because they are probably desperate for new stuff, which they are not. But so that was our way of thinking. So like Would you say you're definitely going to wait with the new EP until the pandemic has kind of at least calmed down a bit before it gets released?
The short answer is yes.
Yeah.
I think for me personally, where I am at as a solo artist, having new material would really truly only benefit me in the States if I was able to tour on it immediately.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest hurdles as an independent American artist is the fact that radio is non-existent.
Oh, it's non-existent around here either.
Okay. I know it's different in some other countries. I don't know. I don't know what it's like for you guys. But
I mean, let's just say for the music that we do and probably the kind of music that you do, there's no like radio landscape that you can work with. You know, there's
there's the local NPR stations, like our public radio. And then, you know, the handful of radio stations that have been supportive to me in the past, but nothing more mainstream.
Yeah.
And I think one of the challenges that I also kind of grappled with when this whole thing happened and I know I'm sitting on this record was the fact that, you know, depending on your size and reach, your booking agent is already working on your next headline tour and figuring out the dates and putting holds for next year. I don't have that opportunity. I'm still a support act on a good tour or a headliner on a smaller tour. And now we're at complete and utter risk of not having independent venues, which would be like, I don't know where, I guess basement shows are going to have to come back.
Yeah.
If that ends up happening. So for me, I think the best course of action, because also I wanted to start courting relationships with labels and starting to see where I can start getting some additional support from instead of doing everything on my own, which I've always been happy to do. But
you've got to try it, don't you? I mean,
asking for help is never a bad idea.
Even if it doesn't work out, it's an experience, you know.
Exactly. And you know, I want to give my music that opportunity. And as much as I would love to release this album right now, I just don't know with the landscape of what's going on here and elsewhere, honestly, but I don't think that it would be as beneficial.
Yeah. Are there any gigs going on at all? Like
live streams.
That's
And actually, like, there are some drive-in concerts that are happening.
I heard about, I think Silverstein have done one recently. That must have been
Front Bottoms did one in Philadelphia. I know there's a couple other places in Pennsylvania. And I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
For me, I could do a live stream, but.
Do you want to? Like, is it something that you enjoy? Because I did too. When the pandemic hit in March, I was like, I've got to do something. We've got this record coming out because our album was released in May. So
yeah,
it was bad timing. So the record label went, you've got to do something. The tour is canceled. So I went on Instagram and I was like playing my songs and people were so grateful that, you know, anything was going on really that they could watch on their couch, you know? And so you'd play the song and then the song ends and there's just silence and you look into the lens of your cell phone and you go, you're probably clapping, so thank you. And I must admit, I hated it.
It's tough to do the, like, one of the best parts about playing a show is that energy and that interaction you get from the crowd. And because otherwise it's the most uncomfortable, vulnerable thing. Like, I don't know about you. I have a harder time playing my music to one or two people than I do a room of 1,000 people.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, absolutely. Cool. I figured I'm not alone in that.
No.
playing to a computer is like playing to one person and yeah. it's, and staring them straight in the eyes, but their eyes that greened up. Yeah. And it's
and the
so...
computer go and it goes like this. Convince oh, yeah. me now.
Oh, it,
play your best tune. Play Wonderwall.
I have only done one live stream, and it was the Booze Cruise. It was to benefit the venue.
Yeah, I did that as well. Yeah, I did that too.
And then I'm going to do another concert on election night. I'm working with an organization called I Voted, and you are only eligible to get tickets to the event if you post a selfie of yourself at a polling location.
Cool.
And I felt that that was like an incredibly important thing to do. There's so many incredible bands that are becoming a part of this festival. It's like hundreds of bands. Like it's
cool.
So cool. But other than that, I kind of stray away from it. It's I don't dislike it. I've been posting some Instagram videos of me playing songs, but the live aspect is like you can't possibly keep up with the comments rolling in if you're actually trying to like be in the moment.
Exactly. So we did, there are live shows going on in Germany right now. So
we did
at the Olympic Stadium in Munich, which holds, I think, 60,000 people, and they let 500 in to keep the necessary distance. It was the weirdest thing. And I couldn't sleep for 3 days because, you know, at the Olympic Stadium, I used to go see like all the big bands when I was younger and with my parents and all that kind of, I went to see U2. I remember seeing AC/DC there, I think, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I would always say to my mom when I was like 14 or something, I would, I want to play music and I want to do the following things. I want to release a record. I want to be on tour. I want to play big festivals and I want to play the Olympic Stadium in Munich once. And for like the last 3 or 4 years, I had 4 of those 5 on my list. I had them done, you know, and I was like, but the Olympic Stadium's never going to happen, you know? So I was like, yeah, 4 out of 5. That's good. And then the call came in. Do you guys want to play the Olympic Stadium? I was like, who's this? You know, who's on the phone? It must be a prank call. But things are never as good as you imagine them to be. So it was really weird. So people had to wear masks when they got in, and they were allowed to take them off when they were sitting down and watching the show. And when they got up to dance or sing along or anything like that, they had to put them back on. And there were like 30 security guys around the area jumping into the crowd going, put that mask on right now. And it was weird. So I don't remember anything about the show. I just looked out for people in the crowd going, he doesn't have a mask on.
Did you at least get that one moment where you were?
Yeah,
like,
I told the story. I told the story on stage. Like I've told the crowd saying like, this is, I don't know about you, but this is a big deal for me.
That's amazing.
Which is very egocentric. I wouldn't do that normally on stage.
No, but that's also.
Hey, let's make this about me and me alone. You know, it's not my kind of thing.
That's a very human thing. And it's also really amazing that the people that were there understood. I mean, there's always seemingly a wall between the audience member and the artist, especially when you become a, like, not that I know what it feels like to become a large artist, but once you start playing larger venues, it's not the same. It doesn't feel the same. It feels like there's actual distance.
Yes, absolutely.
On both sides, from a crowd member and from a person on stage. There's physical distance and there's a lot more emotional distance.
Yeah.
And I think that when you close that gap a little, it's really endearing.
Yeah,
that's it's cool. Really endearing.
So when the pandemic hit, I was like, so we were on tour. We had this record coming out. We, you know, it felt like a job, a great job, but a job. And now then I left the guitar in the basement for like 4 or 6 weeks. And then I started playing again. And I was like, I'm really enjoying this. So I don't need the whole business side of it. I'm enjoying making demos on my own and, you know, showing them to my wife, who goes, "That's a good song. It's very typically you, but yeah, that's a good song." And that was enough for me. How about you? Like, do you miss like the audience? Do you miss being in the business?
I do.
Really?
And maybe cool. It's because I've grown. Here's the thing. I don't like being a solo artist.
Yeah.
I love the camaraderie of being in a band. I hated when I was recording my first record, asking the session players, my friends that were playing in my band, being like, "What do we think about this?" And they'd be like, "Well, it's your song."
Yeah.
And I'm like, ugh, yeah. I need
Give that. Me your opinion now.
I need that community. And so I always knew that when I would click as a solo artist would be when I worked with the right producer.
Yeah.
When I got the right group of friends to play and explain to them explicitly, like, "I really would like for you, even though this is a one-time thing, I really would like for you to kind of act as though you are in this band. I want your opinion. I value your opinion." And I need that. And so that's why I think I fell into being like the hired gun session auxiliary player, touring musician, all of that stuff. Yeah. But I loved that because I could write at night on the bus or, you know, in an hotel elevator if I was by myself or something like that. I have voice memos. That's how I record songs.
Yeah, most people do, yeah.
And I loved the community of being around other musicians. And I think that when it all kind of got stripped away, I was forced to kind of like just be alone in my thoughts once again. And although I don't dislike that, it's taken a lot longer for me to like be like, "Oh, right, I do like playing."
Yeah.
But I've also been doing a lot of session work for other people. And that, oh my God, like if I have a deadline for myself of a song that I need to write for me and finish by this date, I will wait until the night before.
But that's such a musician thing to say. Oh, I think most people are like that.
But when I was approached with session work, I was like, "Sick, I'll send it to you tomorrow."
Yeah. I'll get it done right now.
Yeah. And I think cool. that I miss like the community aspect of it. So yeah. I have a question for you. Being in a band, like, were you guys working together during that time when you couldn't? Was there a time when you guys could not all get together?
Well, we could have because we have our own studio and all that kind of stuff.
Gotcha.
Outside of the city. So, you know, no police around or anything. So you could basically, when I would, you know, I live in a small village, 16,000 people live here, 16,000. So when I get out of the house and go for a, you know, for a run or something, I'll just, you know, there'd be no one in the forest. So nothing really changed for me. But Pasi, our bass player, he lives in downtown Munich. And he was like, we won't be able to see each other for the next couple of months. And I was like, "What? Why? Get on the train, get over here. Let's start working on stuff." And he was like, I'm that's too dangerous. So he was like, he was really scared. Mm-hmm. And that went on for like 8 weeks. And then we were allowed to meet again in groups of five maximum, five people. So that was like, that's good. We are four.
So
we started working on it, but we didn't really. So I came up with the song that's going to be our next single called The Best Part. And we have never had bigger fights about a song than on this one, because I was like, I know how to do this thing. And then John would go, "Well, I could, how about I play a lead guitar thing like this?" And I was like, no, we don't need that. So I was like, it was kind of a dictatorship. So I felt like a solo artist for the first couple of days, because I was like, you play this, don't play that. You know, and they were like stripped of their creativity, really. They were like, what am I doing? So Pasi kind of, at one point, he handed me the bass. He went, well, you play it then. If you know how to play it, you play it. And then I realized if you've got to let them have their kind of creative freedom, at least a little bit. So it's your song. Those are your lyrics. That's all okay. But you there must be some way in for those people, because otherwise you might just, like you said, hire some people that are great at what they do. The best drummer in town. There you go. You play like this. You play that. And they do. And it can be a great song, but I think it's a better song when you kind of open up a little bit and let other people contribute for a change. And that's really hard for me. So when you say you are kind of a band person, so you like being like bouncing stuff off of each other, and I'm not like that at all. I prefer if music were a game of chess, really. So you go there and then that happens.
One of the things that I've found from being in a band where I wrote all of the songs, either me or my sister wrote all of the songs.
Yeah.
And this could maybe be a useful tool as well, if you feel so strongly about a specific organization, instrumentation of the song, is I've had my bandmates be like, look, I want your input on this, but I want you to hear it the way I'm hearing it. Can you just try it this way? And let's see how it feels. And then once you know where I had it in my head, do it your way. I just want you to hear what I'm hearing.
And then most of the time they understand.
Yeah, because also it's more like an exercise too, where like I'm not, oh my gosh, I've been trying to write this instrumental for my show, trying to write a theme song, and I can't play drums for shit, obviously. I'm not a drummer. But
GarageBand.
Boyfriend is a drummer. I can't even do it in GarageBand. So I finally like went downstairs and I was like, Joe,
please.
10 seconds of drums, please. Just do it. Just do it. And he's like, well, what do you want it to sound like? I was like, a 90s rock song, 10 seconds of drums, go. Yeah. And like in 5 minutes, he had done it. And I was just like, oh, thank God.
That could have been so much easier.
Oh, if I just asked you firsthand. But yeah, I think sometimes like we have such a vivid, as a songwriter, we have such a vivid idea of what we want the song to become.
Yeah.
That's great. And that's perfect. The value that I find in having other musicians is that it helps you from getting stuck in the same songwriting rut that you find yourself in. I write the same song over and over and over again. How do you make it different? You get people's opinions. Yeah. You get other people bringing what they're strong at to the table. And so I've always found that sometimes it's best to convey your opinion and then be like, that's what I'm hearing. Tell me what you think. Because more often than not, once they hear what you hear, they'll hear it too.
Yeah.
But then they'll be like, but if we do this, I think that'll really push it.
Do you get excited about other people's ideas then? Like instantly?
Yes.
Does somebody play a guitar lick and you go, that's it? Because I never do. It takes days. So I have, it takes days. So we do a song, and most of the time I start out with Benny, our drummer, in the studio. We lay down some kind of basic track, and then I overdub all the guitars the way I want them to sound, and then they take the guitars out and John comes in and plays his parts, and then I have, I don't know, I suppose it's called demoitis or something, so and they send it around and I put it on and I was like, oh my God, it's shit now, you know. It's the song dies for me. It's not as good as it was. It sucks big time. So, and then I'm,
that's not fair.
It's not fair for, you know, if you're collaborating with other musicians, it's just not fair.
I guess I have always thought about, and maybe it's like I have master imposter syndrome where I'm just like, it's not good enough. Nothing is good enough. I'm not as good as I think I am. I'm not good at all. But when I worked, so my last EP, I worked with Arun Bali from Saves the Day.
Yeah.
We play music together as well. And we write music together. And so I knew having him as a producer would be the next best thing to having a bandmate. He's also a shredder on guitar.
Yeah.
He so can I play trust
pretty much
him.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I trust him explicitly. And then also for this EP, I got into the studio with Will Yip, who is someone who I've always wanted to work with because he does the Menzingers and Tiger's Jaw and Turnover and like all of these bands where I'm like, he knows.
Yeah, he brings out the best in those bands.
Yes. And so I always get excited because I may love the song that I'm going to in a demo form, but he's always, Will, especially when I first got into the studio with him, he was like, okay, are you open to trying things? Because we can try them. And then if you don't like them, they're gone.
Yeah.
But are you open to trying some weird shit?
I suppose I'm not.
Yes.
I wouldn't be. That's the difference.
And I think you got to unlock that part of your
brain.
Yeah,
I envy you so much for that because I'm like, if a producer went, are you open to trying new ideas? I was like, hell no. You know, I know how this song should sound like in my head.
You need to find that there's so much freedom in letting go. Sometimes you can't be the only driver. Because if you've got a long drive, you're not going to make it all the way there.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I think that's part of the magic for me is having this little seedling and seeing what it becomes.
Yes.
I know that in the bones, the song is good. I want to hear how much better it can become with other people's input.
We ended up arguing about two guitar parts that were like 3 seconds long for 4 days until I gave in. And I was like, oh, fucking hell.
Now, are you happy with the finished part?
Yes. That was...
That's
your dog.
Yes. She's tiny too.
It's all right. She sounds big though.
She's got a big dog bark.
Yeah.
But she's about 25 pounds.
Okay. So it took me, I think, 3 or 4 days. And then I heard it too. So I put the song on like 30 times a day and I was like, oh, it's not as good as it could be.
Maybe you need like a mantra when you're in the studio.
Yeah. And then after like, it clicked after like a couple of days and I was like, I think I love this, you know, but it took ages and I suppose that makes it very hard for people to work with me.
Well, it's hard as a songwriter to relinquish the control over the piece of music that you've held dear for so long in the writing process.
Yes. Yeah. But I have one more question that I ask all my guests on the show. And I think we've talked about this when we were on tour together. Have you ever heard of a thing called German compliments?
Yes. They're my favorite thing in the world. They make you a tougher individual.
Why is that a thing? I mean, I'm half...
You tell me. I don't know.
You know, I suppose we've never really thought about it, but it happens to us as well. So I'm half British, half German. So I never considered myself German in any way. So I kind of look at them from an outward perspective. I was born in Munich, by the way, so I'm probably more German than I don't want to admit. But so I think it was Dave Oss, I think, first talked to me about it. And he was like, man, German people are so brutally honest when they come up to you at the merchandise stand after the gig. And then I kind of did some research online, and there's actually a Twitter thread where like people
find that.
I'm gonna send you the link. It's
Please
hilarious.
Do.
And they and you read them, and I in my mind I read them with like the thickest German accent. So people walk up to the guy at the merch table, to the musician at the merch table, and go, this show not so good. Why not so good? Last show was very good last year. Mm-hmm. And then they go, but I will take the t-shirt in size XL, please.
Yes.
So why? Why? Or that was a really great show. Why did you get so fat? And I was like, what?
But yeah, then, it's
do you have like a favorite story, like a favorite German compliment that you got or that you heard about?
No, I don't have one that was here's the thing is that like they happen so frequently when I'm over there, and none of them I guess have necessarily been aimed directly at me. Actually, I feel as though I probably got a couple when I opened a few shows for Dave.
Yeah.
Where they asked why I didn't have vinyl of my EP because they didn't want to buy the vinyl of the full length because it's not as good, or something like that. And I'm like, well, thank you.
How would they know though?
But see here, the German compliment, the secret to the German compliment is that it leaves you feeling so shitty.
Yes.
You don't know when they did it to you. Because they without a doubt preface it or somehow sneak in a compliment, but it is nowhere near as potent as the poison.
Yeah. I totally get what you mean.
Because you're taken aback a bit. Like, and I think that's the moment that you know you've been had, is when you have that moment of silence to actually think about what was just said and be like, oh, you kind of just offended me.
Yeah.
But you've already moved on and you want a t-shirt.
Yeah. So he's basically buying his way out of this by buying the t-shirt. Kelly, it's been great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You have a great rest of the day.
Thanks, and have a good evening.
You say hi to everybody I know if you meet them or talk to them.
Will do. I absolutely will. Take care. Cool. Say hello for me as well.
Yes. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Yep. Bye.
So there it was, my conversation with Kaylee Goldsworthy. I want to thank Kaylee once again for coming on the show. And I'm going to leave you guys with a song by Kaylee's former band. This song is one of my favorite songs of all time. This is The Scarlet Ending with The Way We Used To Be on Plenty of Noise. I'll see you next time. Peace.